Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Duke Pauli, and today I'm going to be sharing some results from our QTL mapping, looking at drought and heat stress that we've been conducting. So this slide kind of sums it up. All of agriculture is facing these same kind of conditions where we have diminishing freshwater and high variable weather patterns, and cotton, just like everything else, is not immune. And the most effective way to overcome this is through good applied breeding, and part of that is connecting genotype to phenotype in a very robust manner. Just briefly contrasting evolutionary rates of genotyping technology versus phenotyping. In 1997, we had 3,000 ADI 370s running for a year to sequence one human genome. Approximately now in 2014, with single molecule DNA sequencing, we can do a human genome, and they're claiming 72 hours to 4 days. In 40 years, nothing has really changed in terms of phenotyping. This gentleman measuring plant height with steel tape, the only thing that really has changed is now we use a barcoded measuring tape. And this disparity really highlights something that's occurring in the field, and that is we have this huge imbalance of data that we spend all this time generating genomics data, but without a phenotype to connect it to, what are we really left with? I mean, we have huge online databases like NCBI and whatnot, but do we have that same capacity for phenotype data? And so instead of having this mule, we need more of a Clydesdale. And so one of the problems with field-based phenotyping is, most of you know, it's time-intensive. You can only collect a limited amount of data. Typically, the data you're collecting occurs at the end of the season near the terminus of the plant's life cycle, so you've kind of missed out on all the developmental processes that have taken place to get to that point. Also, there's trait bias. I mean, typically you're scoring, you know, easily scored traits that you can visually identify, you know, plant height or something like that, or something you can trust undergraduates with. And more so, it's expensive. You know, having undergraduates or having field technicians to measure these traits is a lot of work. High-throughput phenotyping opens up an avenue of we can use developing technologies and proximal sensing to gather a large amount of data on the plants at a rapid pace. And so what this is really leading to is an increase in the type of populations that we can work with. We can work with larger populations like NAM populations that incorporate thousands or even tens of thousands of individuals, which is now happening in the wheat and barley community. And with these increased populations, we garner this power to do, you know, more robust tests in terms of, you know, detecting genes in QTL and really unraveling the quantitative nature of our most important traits. What's more important, I guess, to me is that this technology opens up a whole new plethora of traits to target. Mainly those are ones that develop with a time component. These are developmental traits, but these are also traits that are in response to environmental pressures like heat and drought. And for the purpose of the talk today, that's kind of what I'll be talking about. So I'm sure some of you have already seen this before. I know Mike trots this out quite a bit. This was a high-throughput phenotyping platform developed at USDA Maricopa in conjunction with the University of Arizona. Basically, it is a high-clearance tractor that has a set of sensors mounted on the front of it. And what we can collect is canopy temperature using infrared thermometers, plant height using pretty much a sonar, and then finally canopy reflectance to calculate vegetative indices. Tying it all together, we have this GPS RTK system. The RTK part's important because instead of giving us, you know, foot to a meter resolution, the RTK system allows us to get the observations tied down to centimeter level accuracy, which is really what makes this type of research possible. And then finally, we have data loggers, because we have a lot of incoming data. It's important to timestamp it, you know, combine it all so it's all accurate. And you can see the average tractor speed is about 2.8 kilometers an hour. At this point, it was sampling about one data point per meter. You can subsequently increase that to much more. So I don't think, you know, you can get as much data as you want. The experiment I'm going to be talking about today occurred in Arizona, Maricopa, from 2010 to 2012. Arizona is an ideal spot to do this, clear skies, limited rainfall, and it's hot. The population specifically that we're looking at is a cross between TM1 and NM24016. The NM line, it's an upland variety that has intergress segments of the Barbadense genome, so it incorporates some of those supposed heat-tolerant genetic effects that we're hoping to test. So there were two treatments. There were two treatments, well-watered and water-limited. Basically, the water limited was calculated at a 50% rate based on evapotranspiration from the well water, and the irrigation was controlled with drip, subsurface drip tape. So we had pretty good control over the amount of water that the plants were getting. And again, there was 2 reps in each treatment, so a total of 4 observations per line. This bottom image, some of you may have seen before, but this is kind of what the data looks like that we collected from the tractor. I know it's kind of hard to squint at, but each one of those circles represents a canopy temperature time point. So, you know, you can see clearly that the darker blue means that the canopy is cooler compared to the green, which means it's warmer. And so clearly right here, you can see that, yes, in fact, the technology can discern between the 2 treatments. And with even that, you can see there is within-field variability. And this is just 1 time point during the day. To preface this, in 2010, there's about 5 days in which data was collected. In 2011 and 12, there were 10 days. And within a day, the tractor is sent to the field 4 times. So essentially, we're generating 40 QTL data sets per year. And so I'm just going to talk about some canopy temperature data. Here's just the box plot of the actual adjusted means. We see that we have pretty good variation. We also see that the water limited typically has a higher canopy temperature than the well watered, which is what we need to see for the study. Again, 2010, we had a little bit of a limited data set, so that's why we don't see quite the spread and variation that we see in 2011 and in 2012. And so here's some correlation values between the different readings across the days and between the well watered and the water limited. The main thing to focus on is, of course, along the diagonal, we see that's where we get the highest correlations, i.e., there's a week essentially between the time points, and that means, that we're collecting about the same information. But the thing that's interesting is that as you progress through the season, those correlations drop off. And what this highlights is that the production environment is dynamic, and what's happening in 1 week is not representative of what happens later in the season in terms of canopy temperature and NDVI as well. And so this is kind of one of the impetus for doing high-throughput phenotyping and being able to collect data over time. And so the main take-home message with the canopy temperature and lint yield and the relationship is that, increased leaf transpiration under drought stress contributes to higher lint yield by virtue of the fact that if the canopy is cool, the stomata are open, it's still continuously fixing carbon, whereas if it's under drought stress, the stomata have shut down. You're no longer fixing carbon, and you're not contributing to lint yield. These are from 2 different years at different time points, but you see the R-squared values are pretty similar. I just selected these two. If you look across any of the time points, you see this same general pattern in terms of consistency, the relationship between these 2 traits. The next trend we'll talk about is normalized difference vegetative index, NDVI. It's commonly used to measure essentially the greenness of the plant. It was developed by satellite technology to basically tell, forests from, desert. And in our application, we're not really using it for that at all. We're using it as a proxy to measure canopy architecture change. So what NDVI is the amount of reflected infrared light versus the amount of absorbed red light that the canopy's gathering. And so by proxy, if you think about in the morning, the leaves are flat, they're perpendicular to the incoming light rays. But as the plants undergo drought stress, they begin to wilt and curl up like you can see in this picture, right? And they've now kind of have droopy leaves. As a result, you're not reflecting as much light back up to the sensor. And this is how we're kind of measuring the change in canopy architecture. And how this looks over the course of the day, as you'll see in the top, that's, in the wet treatment, it's staying relatively flat, i.e. the canopy architecture is not changing. The plants are maintaining transpiration, they're maintaining leaf turgidity, and they're staying erect. Compare this with the dry treatment. We see things are going pretty good. About 10 o'clock, though, when it's really starting to get hot in Arizona, it tanks. It just drops off, wilting occurs, and now we see this drastic decrease in the NDVI readings, again signaling that the canopy is now wilting. And so how this relates together is that we see higher NDVI values under drought stress are associated with higher lint yields. Again, tying these 2 components together in terms of canopy temperature and NDVI, it's essentially measuring the same type of response in terms of heat and drought. And so these 2 time points are from different years. Again, different types in the growing season. But again, we see the same type of relationship between lint and NDVI. In terms of consistency, this is great. It means that our sensors are working properly. that we are, you know, collecting true biological signal, not just noise. But as we move forward, we see that there's a strong negative relationship between canopy temperature and NDVI. Again, as the canopy can maintain its temperature and stay cool, it maintains leaf turgidity, and we don't see, you know, the wilting that you do in the drought-stressed plants. And this is what's kind of key, is that these traits, you know, may be under the same genetic control. And so I apologize. I realize this is the most unattractive slide you could put up in terms of a giant table with numbers. But if you just get a chance to walk you through it, I think it'll kind of make sense. So in total, we found 17 QTL for NDVI. We found about 14 for canopy temperature. I selected these four because they showed up in both traits. And so if we start with NDVI, you'll see over here, specifically these two QTL, you see there's this temporal pattern where early in the season, the QTL expression is nominal, you know, not really even existent in both years. But then later in the season, it finally kind of kicks in, and we see this continued expression of this QTL in terms of wilting response. Contrast that with this other QTL in this other column. We see that early on in the season, this QTL is expressed, but then as the growing season progresses, it is no longer really needed, and thus its expression is turned down. You also see that we're identifying QTL across years, which is always a good thing. And then there's canopy temperature. This trait is a bear to work with. There are so many environmental factors going on. You're essentially trying to measure the leaf surface temperature as it's getting hotter. And even though we can collect all this data on all four replications in half an hour, the temperature increase that occurs during that time can be 4 to 5 degrees. And what we're really trying to measure is, you know, a half a degree to a degree change in leaf temperature. So at this point, I caution, these are very preliminary results. Part of the reason I come to this meeting was to meet with one of our collaborators in terms of how to deal with this canopy temperature issue. But again, we still see some, kind of the same temporal patterns, specifically where we see this QTL that maybe develops earlier in the season, and then its effects are kind of mitigated later on. Again, you know, canopy temperature hasn't turned out quite as well as NDVI, but I think you can still kind of see the general pattern. And specifically now, if we look at the color coding of the allelic effects, the blue indicates that it's a decrease in the trait, red is a positive. So in these first two columns, you see that these two QTL decrease canopy temperature. If they decrease canopy temperature, that means the leaves should stay more erect, less wilting, and should increase your NDVI values, which is exactly what we're seeing. And so this is great. But none of this really matters, right, if it doesn't impact overall agronomic performance, i.e. lint yield, because that's what really matters. And so we did the mapping for these two traits, and then we did the QTL mapping for lint yield. And sure enough, this one highlighted, this far right column, for these sitting in the back, it's this one highlighted in red in the front. This loci, when we did the mapping for lint yield QTL, it maps with the same identical position as NDVI in canopy temperature. And this was great news. It shows that, you know, not only are we measuring these physiological traits with this, you know, phenotyping platform, but this data comes together and supports the basic physiology of what's happening with the crop plant in terms of mitigating drought and heat stress, and that these QTL do in fact impact yield, which is what ultimately we want to do to, you know, mitigate the, you know, water scarcity and variable weather patterns that I talked about at the beginning. And so moving forward, you know, I guess, you know, conclusions first, you know, we developed this field-based phenotyping platform to rapidly phenotype, you know, hundreds if not thousands of plots. And we reveal there's this temporal QTL pattern associated with canopy temperature and NDVI under drought stress. That canopy temperature and NDVI appear to shared QTL and are associated with higher lint yield under drought stress. And then finally, as we move forward, we're analyzing other traits, including ABA content, chlorophyll content, carbon isotope discrimination, leaf sugar concentration. These are all traits that you measure in response to drought stress. Finally, we're looking at the fiber and agronomic properties, and then we have a really cool data set. It's an ionomics data set in terms of how small molecules are being used to mitigate and used for osmoregulation to combat the effects of, you know, drought and loss of water retention. And so is par for this section. You have to thank Cotton Incorporated, specifically the postdoctoral fellowship program. There's a whole list of collaborators on this project. I'm sure I in fact know that we're missing some of them, but with that, thank you for your time. I take any questions. What should the architecture be? Well, realistically, I mean, if you look back in the historical, early varieties that were indigenous to Arizona, they have the oak relief, where it's a very thin spindle leaf. So it's not so much the architecture itself; it's kind of the leaf shape. But if you were gonna go for architecture, you would want a plant that has good heliotropism. Basically, that's response to the actual sun. And some plants can actually turn their leaves down in response to too much sunlight to mitigate damages to the actual chlorophyll apparatus and whatnot. Yeah. Don?
Do you think you can maintain your resolution using a prune system in time?
So that is the next step. Oh, Don asked if we can maintain the same type of resolution using a drone system. We're working on that this summer. We've just got our COA approved. We have projects, essentially figured out and planned. Actually, we're kind of going to go after low-hanging fruit first. The canopy temperature from a drone, it'd be extremely challenging. You literally measure a half a degree to a degree. And getting that from 30 to 50 feet in the air, you would think, right? I mean, but then you run into the same problem as, when you have a drone, now you're dealing with angles in terms of reflected sunlight and also the camera technology. I mean, FLIR makes a wonderful product, but when you strap it to a drone and put it 50 feet in the air, it's not so hot. So this study was over 3 years. This same platform has been used to gather data on some of the regional nursery breeding trials that's occurring at Maricopa. So, I mean, yes, it's been continued on. There's actually a subsequent population of Pima varieties. They were used because of their, effects with heat and drought. And they're having the same type of results. Mike has analyzed it, and it's fairly consistent to what we're seeing in this population. What's that?
By sensor equipment, you can ask them the number of bulbs per plant.
Can we get number of bulbs per plant? The technology exists. LIDAR imaging is kind of what we're working with. I don't know if Andy French is in the room, but that's something he's kind of working on. But yes, the capability to map bulbs on a plant, it looks like we might be able to do it with a defoliated plant.
Okay.